Good to see you, Irene. I hope you're doing well.
Yes, thank you. You too. I hope you're doing very well. I'm actually not doing that well.
Okay,
I have five exams this week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. One every day.
Well, now I feel really bad because I just completed my last exam last Thursday. And now I have 6 weeks of semester break where I have nothing to do.
You don't have class either.
No, I don't have class. It's 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Semester break.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, I don't know what to do with myself. No, jokes aside, I actually have six. So I'm studying at TUM, right? And in Germany, you have these bigger semester breaks between the semesters. I don't know, like, maybe you have a different starting time for the semesters. But I mean, considering that you're also doing your exams now, I think it's pretty much aligned. But yeah, I have different friends who are studying abroad in different countries, and it's different. But in Germany, I now have 6 weeks of semester break. And considering that I just finished my exams, there's also like no new content or anything new to revise or learn. I might have to go into some of the retakes for some of the exams that I took. So maybe my semester break is going to be shortened. But in general, it's 6 weeks. And yeah, the whole idea behind it is that you use those bigger semester breaks to do other cool things outside of uni, which could be things like doing an internship, could be things like starting a project, yeah, things like that. So it's supposed to be used properly, not to be wasted, but it's still there. It's still 6 weeks. And theoretically, I don't have anything to do for uni, so I could just, you know, lay on the beach, which we don't have in Germany, and enjoy my life.
Oh my God, that's really good, because I feel like university in Spanish in Spain just doesn't prioritize that at all. Like, we don't have, so most people in Spain, they have winter break, so like 3 weeks of winter holidays, and then they start their exams in January. So they basically have no holidays because they have to study for their exams. And then the term just starts again like a week after they finished. And then there's just exams again in May. And then summer. And then you start again in September. It's basically school. For me, I was lucky because my exams were before the winter holidays. So I finished like the 22nd, I think, of December. So I had proper holidays where I didn't have to really do anything. But now I finished these exams, which are, they're not finals, they're just partial exams. And I've had class, like I had class on Friday. So I had class every day before that. But okay. I don't have class this week. So I only go to take the exams. And then I have no holidays after that. And then I have the Easter holidays end of March, but that's 2 weeks. And then May exams. And then we have summer. But I don't get that, because you started in October. I started the 1st of September. How do you have so many holidays? How much do you have in summer? Because you still have quite a lot. I don't understand.
No, so this is basically, I mean, there's two semesters per year, right? I think that's the shared thing across all universities.
Yeah.
And then within each semester, you also just have like maybe one or two week break, which we had over Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. But then this is just the end of the first semester. So I'm done with the first semester now. Now I have 6 weeks. And then I go into the second semester. And during the second semester, so actually, like, during the holiday, like during summer, I won't have any holidays. I'll be in uni studying, right? Because this is my 6 week break now. And then the semester starts on the 14th of April again. But then I'm going to have my second semester, right? And going through that. So I won't be having, you know, any break during the summer period, which I guess might also be, you know, a geological factor, because obviously, like, for you, it's like hot in summer, so you definitely need those holidays in summer.
Yeah.
We don't, So for us, it's I have this bigger break now in between semesters, and then within the semester, I have like a short break. Yeah.
Okay. I kind of get that. We do have almost, if I pass everything, I have 3 months of holidays in the summer. So I do.
Yeah.
Get,
yeah. I mean, I do so get stop that. Complaining.
Yeah. Okay. I will. No, but it is really hard to go to school during those months. Like you could only be at home with the aircon. If not, yeah. You die.
Okay. Now you're referring to the heat though, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because for me, I've actually noticed now having this. So it was brutal. I have to say, I don't want to over dramatize or anything, but the first semester was brutal for me. I definitely got shot from every direction and I got hit from every direction, so to speak, metaphorically. So just so you can picture, yeah, picture what I felt like.
To use another word, but.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that was sort of the situation. It was brutal. I was so relieved when I finished that last exam. And now it feels good to have those 6 weeks. But I do have to say, I mean, the 6 weeks haven't started. So last week I finished my last exam on Thursday. It's Sunday today. So it's just the regular weekend, right? I haven't even started the first day of the actual 6 weeks. But I already... I already have certain struggles with this semester break. And I'm not trying to say this like, oh, I'm like, I love uni, I love work, I just want to get back to it. But what I don't like about the semester break is that now it takes more mental energy to do the same amount of work because there's not the same supporting structure, right? So for example, now if I want to go to university and study or do work or something, it's the same thing as I was doing during the exam season, during the semester, but it takes more energy because nobody else is going there. So if I want to go there, I really need to actively decide, I'm going to go there. I don't have any friends who want to come with me. They all just want to, you know, relax, do things outside of uni. I have some who are going to join me, right? But it's frustrating because I now have all of this time on my hand. Right. And you would assume that this gives me the great opportunity to finally just do the things I want to do. But for some reason, it's harder because I don't have that supporting structure. And I need to actually say, OK, I'm going to read that book because I actually want to read that book. I'm going to work on this project. Right. And I don't have this, you know, supporting system. And it's it's a challenge, this holiday thing.
I love this because now you get what I mean. Like, because I'm not saying we're in the same situation, obviously, but that's what's happened with me, like, forever. Because obviously when you're studying, you have your structure and you have time to do certain things. But then when you don't have exams, you don't have to study, you have more time to do those things. But you don't do those. Like, it's not proportional to the time you have, the things you do, because it is so much harder. And it's really annoying because if you don't take advantage of those 6 weeks, it's kind of wasted because then you start school again and you don't have that much time. You can't do what you could have done with that time. But when you do have that time, it's really hard to use it. Yeah, just good luck. No, I'm joking. No, I mean, it's an opportunity to create a new routine because it's a long period of time. So 6 weeks, you can have a new routine you can stick to and that you like, even though you have to change it back again. 6 weeks is a long time, so it's not too bad. It's not like a week where you don't know what to do because it takes time to adapt to something new and to stick to it. So I don't know, just, yeah, try to force your friends to help you and like do the same thing, because it is easier that way. Because I remember in last summer when I finished my exams, which were really hard, I really wanted to like finish and just go, and I don't know, I remember I said, okay, I'm gonna go to the library and I'm gonna do my things. I'm not gonna do schoolwork because I finished, but I wanna, I don't know, just read in the library or work in the library. But it was so hard because obviously no one was in the library, which is what pushes you to go to the library, to spend time with people that are in the same mood as you, but no one was in that mood. So it's just, yeah, it's a challenge. But then when you do it and when you stick to that, you just feel so accomplished because no one else is doing anything. Because when everyone's doing things, then it's the same. But if you're doing things and no one else is, and you took advantage of that time, it feels great. So when you get back, you were like, okay, now it's time to focus again, but I've done this, I've taken advantage of the time. So
yeah, so you get that ego bonus essentially.
Yes,
right, for being the only one doing it. Yeah, I remember I had this phase when I was younger. It's kind of embarrassing, but I'm going to be authentic now, okay? Okay? I had this phase where I was always listening to this motivational speeches, right? And there's this one group of motivational speakers. They're not particularly public figures or anything. They're just these guys which do these speeches online on YouTube. And you can also like listen to them on Apple Music. But there was this one group, they're called... I think they're just called Fearless Motivation. I think that was the name. And yeah, that was this one thing that always stuck with me. Like they had this concept of like the lone wolf, right? The wolf who goes against the, or like the fish that doesn't swim with a group, but that swims his own path, right? And I think that sort of like, metaphorically describes like the picture you were trying to draw. Yeah.
Were these like motivational speeches where they shout at you or like,
yes, exactly,
you have to do this?
Exactly. Oh my god, for some reason this really got to me, and I do have to say, with all honesty, I do think it sometimes helped. Because it's just a wake-up call, and it's actually it leads me to a topic that, unless you have some other burning topic you want to talk about, might be something we could talk about today. I'm just going to get right to it. And that's something, you know, it's sort of connected. I didn't make this up, this transition. This is a natural transition. Okay, we talked about this. Now I see the connection. Now we're moving on. Okay.
Very good.
So the topic is, in plain and simple terms, sort of the conflict and the two opposing sides of conservatism and liberalism. We're getting political today.
Wow, I did not expect that.
Yeah, me neither. To be fair, I mean, none of us are politicians or anything. I don't think you need to be a politician to be able to talk about these concepts. And obviously, there's a ton of different areas and specific fields in which these terms, you know, might refer to different things. And obviously, there's different spectrums of these terms, right? You can see it as an ideology. You can consider this, these two opposing sides in the political context, in the social context, whatever it may be. But just to explain the connection to like this fearless motivation thing and the guy screaming at you and telling you to get up in the morning and rise with the sun and go do your job in this world, right? I mean, I guess this definitely has a very conservative tone to it, right? In the sense that it represents a very conservative value system where the return you get on the things you do is dependent, highly dependent on the effort you put in and the discipline you put in, right? And maybe we can talk more about this, you know, like the different values associated with these different sides, you know, liberalism or progressivism, if you want to call it that way. And I also want to connect it to like this like woke culture, because it's... Okay, maybe I can, and then I'm gonna give the word on to you. The thing why this is on my mind is that I feel like nowadays these two sides and the conflict of them keep coming up more and more so, at least for me. And I see it in like practical things in like daily life. So not like sitting in like some kind of politics class at uni, like Heighty Mighty, you know, sitting there with your legs crossed over and then like discussing with your book open in your hand. No, like, I see it, for example, in like watching movies, how movies are changing and how especially like when you have an old movie and you have a new version of that same story or that same movie, you really see the change in values and how it's presented. So, yeah, I think we can get into all of that. Maybe you can just start off and give me like some introductory perspective of yours on this entire topic.
Well, it is a complex topic. No. I mean, it's not that complex, it's just kind of, like, controversial, because it's always, like, thought of, you're one, you agree with one side or the other, not like not a mixed, but you don't have mixed values in general. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, normally is associated, not to say liberalism, like liberal, you know,
yeah,
that part.
Yeah, you pronounce it correctly.
Okay. Don't believe in working hard. Obviously, like, that's not the case. That's not what we're trying to say. But it is true that the other side is more attributed to that. Maybe too much so. Like, obviously, there's... we're not saying, like, hard work and grinding and what it's taught in that side kind of is always best at the same time. Because it feels like it was... We were saying that, and I don't want to... Like, I don't think that's the best thing. It's just what it's attributed. It made me think of Jordan Peterson.
yeah,
because,
for example.
Yeah, I feel like he's kind of in this world, but he's obviously, we know what side, what he thinks, what values he has in that aspect. But yeah, he's totally like attributed to productivity and things like that. And I don't know. I don't really know what to say other than what, it's known. So I want you to guide what you want to say and what you mean, so I can kind of like have an opinion on that.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so I think the part that's interesting to me about this is less, you know, the political side of it and these other aspects of these two ideologies. For me, I think the most interesting part, which is also the one that, you know, we initiated this conversation on, is sort of the value systems associated with it and just the general way of life that you adopt from either being part of one side or the other, or adopting the values of one side or the other. So I think that's sort of like, we can narrow down on that sphere of topics when it comes to these two sides. And then I think it's also like connected to the worldview that is connected to each of those sides, right? And then for me, I'm just really trying to figure out, because I mean, you just said, and I guess nowadays, you know, discussing these topics even is like a hot thing to do, right? And you know, you should be cautious. It's just these two different worldviews, and I wonder to like myself whether it's really a choice you have to make between them, right? Whether you choose one side or the other, or whether there can be a mix. Because personally, again, this sort of like comes down to like personal experience. I feel like I definitely have a good amount of set of conservative values, but I don't necessarily totally disagree with some of the aspects or the values of liberalism, right? And I really just do wonder, yeah, how to sort of find your place in this conflict that takes place on so many levels, and that it seems to me, at least, is becoming increasingly polarized, right? Maybe I can also give like a bit of a backstory. So when I was younger, you know, obviously, you know, not thinking about politics or anything or ideologies, I was just like a toddler doing my thing, you know, walking around on this planet. But I remember the term conservatism is one of these like first, you know, terms, or like, I don't know what the word is, but these like official terms, right? One of the first ones that I actually got to know about, right? And I overheard it in conversations from my parents or things like that. And while growing up, conservatism, or the term conservative, always had a negative connotation for me. It was always used as an insult when I heard it, right? It was like, oh my God, this is so conservative. Oh my God, you are so conservative, right? I always had this very negative connection to the term. And maybe that's also just like the social environment in which I grew up, right? But this was my first confrontation with conservatism. And now, as I've gotten older, and as I've actually learned to, at least to some extent, understand what these terms mean, and I'm not pretending to be an expert or anything, but to, you know, being at the point that I sort of am able to differentiate between these two sides, and that I'm able to identify them in certain contexts, you know, in value systems and in movies, for example, as I mentioned. It's just, yeah, it's just, you know, these two sides. And I wonder, you know, because my view has changed on conservatism, for example, that negative connotation hasn't turned positive or anything, but it has sort of been opened up to be more open towards both of these sides. And I feel like personally, and again, I guess this is a hot thing to do nowadays, to identify yourself with one of these sides. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily a conservatist, yeah. But I also wouldn't necessarily say I'm a liberalist, right? But I also wouldn't, I guess I'm more so like tended towards the conservative side because I do feel more connected to some of the conservative values. Yeah, that was a long okay. streak, just like rambling. Maybe you can add some structure to this.
No, I'd like you to identify, because we've been talking about the values, but what values you attribute to each side, just to like clarify.
Okay. So if I'm to clarify, and maybe like to clarify this on like the biggest level, just yeah. to make it very simple. And I guess this also like leads the conversation to, or well, leads to my opinion on this. I feel like conservatism is, this is going to be something we have to discuss, right? But I think conservatism is more so a realistic perspective. And liberalism, from the way I am perceiving it in different things, is more so a softened up version of things.
Yeah.
And this could be controversial, this statement, right? And again, it sort of, again, supports what I just said, that I personally more so connect with some of the conservative values. But yeah, those are the two sides. And then to give some specific values, you know, obviously, like we talked about this aspect of discipline and hard work. And again, also, I mean, you mentioned Jordan Peterson, right, as one of the representatives or who has become more so like a conservative figure, right? There's also like different values and different aspects, you know, like family structures, the use of speech, which again, like on the liberalist side and also including the woke culture, there's like a higher sensitivity for speech. And yeah, so that's sort of my current perception of it, that conservatism, you know, focuses like on the cold, hard reality, which is difficult and which, you know, requires that discipline and that hard work to be able to control it and manage it and keep it to a bearable extent. And then liberalism, again, we're sort of narrowing this down on this value topic, right? Obviously, when you come to social structures, you know, liberalism is very focused on social inclusivity and all these kinds of things. Yeah, but that's sort of my general perception right now. So, yeah.
Yeah, for me, a clear like differentiation between them. I feel like liberalism is more focused on the social aspect of it, of life in general, like social movements, inclusivity, what you said. And then I feel like conservatism,
because
we don't use that word in Spain, so I don't know. It's more attributed to like work and the financial part of it and economy. I think it prioritizes that. I feel like, which I guess you said it's the hard reality, and I do feel like money is kind of the hard reality we live in. Like, it goes above other social things because it's what we need to live, kind of, if you put it in that sense. Not to say conservatism doesn't focus on the social aspect and liberalism doesn't focus on the economic side, but I do feel like that's the main focus, at least what I see in Spain, so for us, liberalism is the left side and conservatism is the right side. I don't know if it's the same in the US. I'm not really informed on this. I know about Spain. And yeah, most, like, if I ask people I know, why do you vote for the left, for liberalism? The reasons are all social, basically. Otherwise, if I ask my friends or people I know that vote for the other side, their reasons are mostly like economic reasons. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's something I think is really like significant to the values that you associate with each of those. So if you normally in your life, if you associate financial success and financial liberty, things like that, if those are kind of what some of your main values, then it kind of maybe pushes you to one side. And if they're not, I guess it could push you to the other side. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very good addition to what I said, because I think it also sort of explains this perception of my views of these two, like the general world views that derive from those two sides. Because yeah, I mean, as you said, you know, financials and economy and work, you know, that's sort of the basis of being able to do everything else. So that's, I guess, what I meant by this more realistic perspective on reality.
Yes,
you know,
I know, you gotta pay
your bills, and then you can worry about
exactly.
the rest, right? But
exactly.
this is sort of the precondition. And then the other side, you know, focusing more on the social aspects. And I feel also just like putting the human more so into the center of the picture, right?
Yeah.
So again, to give like a specific example of what I mean by this, so there's different movies, again, like old versions of movies and then the new adapted versions of these movies. And in the old movies, there's one specific one I can name. Yeah. So there's this movie called The Last Airbender, right? And it's based on the story of Aang, you know, The Last Airbender. It's also an anime, which has like an animated version. But there's a movie from it, which I saw, I think came out in 2011 or 2013. So it's pretty old, right? And then now there's a new adapted, yeah, not too old, but...
yeah. Not to offend anyone, it's not really old, but it's yeah. not new, yeah.
Yes, it's not new. But then we have a new adapted Netflix version of that, which is currently streaming on Netflix, which is pretty popular. I watched it. I think it's also really good. But I think you really see the difference. The first movie just seemed darker, but it seemed more realistic. You know, the characters were actually struggling. You know, the antagonist of the story, you know, who's this the son of this king of one of the tribes, right? And his father has exiled him because he wasn't good enough, right, for him. So he exiled him and he gave him this impossible task to find this last airbender, which is the main character of the story. And only if he were to achieve that impossible task, which is really difficult to do, then he would be allowed back into his home, into his Fire Nation's tribe, right? You don't need to know the specifics, but so the antagonist has a pretty dark and rough story, right? He's the son of this king, so in a good position, but then his father, you know, exiled him and also like scorched his eye with a flame, right, to really mark him and yeah, just made him a fool within the nation, essentially. So it's a really rough story, and the character, the antagonist, who actually isn't that much of an antagonist at the end anymore, but he really has a rough story, and you can see in that first movie how he's existentially struggling with that burden and with that loss of everything he had when he was born, right? And in the new movie, you definitely have that too, right? The new character playing that, but it just seems sort of softened up, right? It's just, yes, he's also struggling with that, but it just seems, it doesn't seem as real, and it all seems kind of like a joke. Like, yes, he's trying hard to get back and achieve this goal, but it just, there's not that level of intensity. And also like the other characters, you know, it just seems none of it seems so existential. It sort of seems like, you know, they're fighting, but it's like pillow fights, like nobody can actually get hurt, right? And I think that's just an example of where, you know, to me, I feel like, and again, like you could argue whether or not this is a higher adaptation of, you know, liberalism in that new version of that movie, right? You could argue about that. But in general, it just seems less real. It seems softened up. I feel like, and also like in many other movies, right, suddenly this topic of the mental health is incredibly important and taking up bigger parts of storylines, right? And it's again like pushing the human Mosse into the center and his experience. But you know, in older versions, it was just about surviving, you know, like making sure like you actually make it to the next day. And nowadays it's, you know, these movies where the characters can afford to just, you know, indulge in their like mental problems, right? Again, I'm just from an observative point. I know this is like a hot topic. That's sort of my perception of, but I think again it sort of connects to that what you said about, you know, the economics and the survival aspect of conservatism and the associated values. And then basically just to phrase it in more clearly, I guess from my perspective, some of the liberalist values, and I don't mean this in like too much of a generalizing way, because of course there are like important things which should be taken care of and which are important to fix, right? But it just seems, you know, like something that can only sustain on like something like something else, right? You can't, you know, lie in bed all day and worry about, I don't know, like your breakup or something, if you don't have like a system underneath that which sustains that, what, which you know, provides that housing, you know, pays the bills and stuff like that. Yeah,
I'd said as a good example, for example, your 20s, basically, it's always been work hard the first third of your life or two-thirds of your life, and then so you can retire and have money. And now it's a lot about live during your 20s, travel,
explore yourself,
have fun, explore, don't worry, you have all your life to worry. And because I thought about this yesterday, because I saw someone recommending a book. It's called something, The Decade, I don't remember, I'll tell you about it later, but it's about how important your 20s are and how nowadays in society they consider your 20s as the trial and error area, I mean decade, but as in, not as in a business, you try and you still have time to to get better, is in a way that your 20s are not important. And I do think that's kind of like an example of what you're saying, because yes, you can think that, but you can travel if you have reassurance that you're gonna have money in the future. You can't afford to spend 10 years of your life not worrying about the actual reality, which is to earn money, get food on the table, like if you want a family or not, but maybe, and we do kind of prioritizing that as well, because there's also like the biological factor, like yes, life can be long, but even if you take care of yourself, which is our intention, there's still like a biological factor. Even if I want to have kids late, I can't have them when I'm 50. Like, it's really hard. So there's always those things. And I do feel like that's kind of associated to the liberal culture of right now, that kind of not softened, but idealistic reality that you can focus on that when reality is much harder than that. And I do feel like a conservative person would say, like, take advantage of your 20s, make like network, earn money as like from wherever you can and things like that. And yeah, I just wanted to point out that example, which is like really true and really important, because people don't really realize what's behind that. And I don't know, I feel like those like movies in general do represent that kind of thing. Yeah, like dropping out of school because your mental health is not great. Well, yes, obviously mental health is really important, but dropping out of school is not the realistic solution.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, I think that's a really good example. I think you just clarified what I was trying to say up very nicely. Yeah, and of course, like, I want to stress again, there's obviously like different topics we could talk about which are not related to this specific problem, right? Like a specific like social problems that liberalism is trying to fix. But maybe we also have to differentiate here between, you know, liberalism and woke culture, which I guess woke culture is, you know, a subset. Yes. Or a subpart of,
that's true,
of liberalism. But I mean, this example, what you talked about, I guess this is like my key sort of pain point where I start, you know, questioning liberalist values, right? Where I sort of just ask myself, you know, if I watch a movie like that, and I apply the same thing to my life, I feel like I'm just going to get crushed, right, by reality. You know, by you know, if I take things like easy, and I'm not saying, again, like, I totally agree, like, I'm so focusing on my mental health, right? For me, it's incredibly important because it's part of my ability to produce, right? To be productive again. But again, I'm sort of like reconnecting it to actually doing something, and that's why mental health is important. For me, mental health is not important, you know, like, for nothing, right? There's a reason why you want to be in a good mental state, why you want to be in a good physical state, right? Yeah, I don't know. It's just, yeah, I think there's also like in Germany in general, there's also this conflict or this discussion around, you know, the change of the entire workplace. I don't know what's a word, like the work world, I guess.
Yeah, the workforce, workplace.
Yeah, the workforce. And there's this big change where nowadays, like back in the days, right, you as someone trying to get a job, you had to impress the company to actually get the job, right? You had to be the guy who could make things work, who could do things. And nowadays, the young generation of Germany is the one that is forcing the companies to impress them with like nice benefits, with a gym subscription, with like a psychiatrist in the office that, you know, can take care of them, with like a massage like room at the workplace. And again, of course, like I'm increasing the contrast right now. But it's just, I look at my grandfather, for example, and I don't know, like when he was in his 20s, he started building his first house, right? He started like buying stocks, right? Right when he went to uni and he, you know, had conversations with, you know, his professors, he was buying stocks. He was, you know, so he was working like night shifts to make extra money, like at the post office. He was like loading up the trains back in the days with like the like packages and stuff, right? To make extra money so that he could invest it, so that he could buy his first car, so that he could, you know, pay for the date night when he was like going out with a girl. That's like something he told me, like, always pay, you know, it's your job, you know, take the responsibility, and, you know, do extra work so you can. And that's something, you know, that the woke culture would probably be like, yeah, you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't be, you're working during the nighttime. You should be, you know, focusing on doing things for yourself too, right? You should be taking it a bit slower. You don't have to build a house in your 20s, right? You can take your time with it. You can explore yourself. And I'm not totally disagreeing with that in any sense. I think all of these aspects have some truth to them. But also I ask myself, is my ability to take things slower and, you know, to focus on my mental health, to do these types of things, not also something that is really based on the hard work that these previous generations did, so that we now have this wealth where I can say, well, theoretically, I could use these 6 weeks of holiday break that I now have to just, you know, book a plane ticket somewhere because I have enough cash, because, you know, I was born into this wealthy society, and I could just lie on the beach for 6 weeks and I could afford to do that, right? So it's not that it's impossible to adopt these liberalist values or like these woke values in this, you know, wealthy modern society. But I just wonder how sustainable it is and how that's going to affect, you know, future generations if we just lay low and lay back, which again, I'm increasing the contrast. I'm you know, stressing the differences, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I agree. But at the same, I feel like, obviously, I know you're you want to put the contrast to differentiate. But obviously, I think, like, as always, the best point is the middle point and the middle ground between that. Because obviously, what your granddad did was also based on needs. He maybe didn't have money like we have for, like, to pay for date night or things like that, which I guess goes back to the realistic part of it, that he had to do that. It was maybe just based on his goals. He didn't really have to do that, but he wanted to, and he wanted to get that. He wanted to get ahead, and he wanted to get that extra money. But I do feel like if that was, if it was based on goals and not need, that might have been a bit excessive. But I'm not proposing the opposite. So when you went back to the example of your six weeks holiday, I wouldn't say, well, take that time to 100%, do as much as you can. But I wouldn't say, like, take a holiday, obviously not. But what I'm saying is there's a middle ground between resting and also achieving things. And I think that's a bit, like, that's what people need to realize. It's not all about hustle culture, but it's not all about
meditation all day long.
Yeah, exactly. So this kind of reminds me, like, feel good productivity by, like, Ali Abdaal. It is kind of that middle ground. And I don't know, I think just, like, opposites and, like polarized views are not good, but there is a problem in society where we've gone from one polarized view from, like, grinding and, like, working night shifts and everything to completely the other one. And yeah, I see where you point out the problem, and it feels like you're gonna get canceled for saying it because you don't agree with that culture. But, like, I'm not proposing the complete opposite. That's the thing. You're proposing a middle ground, and that's hard to say in society right now. You really can't say that, because then you're, like, the opposite. So
yeah, which I mean is part of like the whole conflict again, right? The fact that about this or choosing a side or something. And again, I want to stress, like, I'm not choosing a side, and I'm also, like,
yeah, I know.
Middle ground.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, the guy Aristotle, I never know how to pronounce his name in English.
Aristotle.
Yeah, it's different in German. I don't know. But you know who I'm talking about, the philosopher, right? He had it all figured out with his, you know, the path of the golden mean, right? The middle path, essentially, the golden middle path. He had it all figured out back then. So, no, I totally agree that there is, you know, probably the best solution for everyone, and also the most sustainable solution for everyone long term, is probably something in the middle, right? But then it's also, you know, saying that is fairly easy as a conclusion. But then specifically when you get practical in life, you know, where specifically do you choose that middle point to be? First of all, do you know exactly where these two sides are? And can you actually determine the exact middle point? And then do you want to be in the precise middle, or do you want to be slightly on the right, slightly on the left? I don't know. It's just, you know, really, like, looking at my grandfather, right? He grew up, you know, in a crushed world, right? I mean, Germany just came out of the world where he grew up in, like, a poor Germany. Like, that was completely destructed, right? He had every reason to be depressed, to feel anxious, to, you know, just lie in bed and cry all day, right? He had every reason to do that. But instead, he worked, he built a house, he built a family, you know, he did all of these things, right? And he just kept going and did his thing and achieved a lot, right? And was part of that process, you know, in his own way. So he ended up in his final position being the headmaster of a school. So he did his contribution in rebuilding that broken world, right? And I grew up in a world that's perfect, right? There's no war, at least not here, right? Every war that's going on in the world is far away from me. You know, I have all of the resources. I have all of the technology. I have all of the time. I have all of the capacities. I'm given everything. And yet, I might be less productive than he was, right? I might be doing less, and not even just in the sense of, you know, comparing me to him and setting him as like the gold standard and everything, but just to put into context, right? Nowadays, I don't know, it just seems to me somewhat superficial or just, yeah, just kind of fake, if I want to say it, you know, like that, that we find so many reasons in this, of course, not perfect world, but especially for those living in this, you know, perfect West, right, in the stable West, we find so many artificial reasons to, you know, take a step back, to slow things down, to give us like some space to rest or whatever. And again, I'm not about rest or anything. I'm not about, I'm not against, you know, taking care of yourself. Like, I am the biggest advocate of taking care of yourself, yeah, but not in the sense of, you know, just wasting your life away. And again, this is not, of course, this is like a very critical way of characterizing the woke culture and the associated liberalism. And of course, that's not just it. And yeah, but it's just, I don't know. Yeah. It's
no, I totally agree. And I think what you're saying, you're totally right. And because I know you, I know you're all for health and taking care of yourself, and I know that, and what you're saying is totally right. And I guess there has, like, that woke culture kind of is a bit like hedonism, yeah. Because what is taking care of yourself? Is it watching TV? Because, like, that is the problem, because like, on the long way, like, taking care of yourself is not that. And I don't know, I just think yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I don't know, it's just,
I think there's
people,
one,
just do what people do, like what everyone does. And if people are talking about, I don't know, disconnecting, taking care of yourself, traveling, seeing the world, people think it's the best. And I don't know.
Okay, I think conclusively, there's one central, yeah, like, value that for me all of this comes back down to. And I think maybe this is my main problem, and maybe I'm also just misunderstanding the sides, but I think this is like the central aspect for me. And I know this is going to make me sound so much like a Jordan Peterson fanboy or something, but I think, you know, the central value that this comes down to for me personally is responsibility and the degree of the adaptation of responsibility in your life for yourself, but also like for the part you play. Okay, so let me like briefly explain this. So basically, I mean, also again, like, I'm going to connect it again to the story of my grandfather, right? He was in a difficult position. He grew up in a difficult world, right? But he took the responsibility as much as he could, you know, carry, and as much as he could take on, to try to make the best of it. But, you know, trying to make the best of it, you know, with what he, you know, had, you know, his effort, his capacities of a single human being, right? Which of course are limited. Nobody is expecting you to be like the Superman of the world and save everything, right? But he took responsibility for his stuff. I was going to say another word, right? But he just took care of, like, you know, his life, right? He took responsibility for it and he tried to make the best of it. He ended up achieving at it, you know, maybe sometimes circumstances, life is difficult, you might not achieve at it, but his intentionality was to take responsibility and try to make the best of it. And with that, and that's essentially what I am supporting. And maybe that's for me like the central value of conservatism. And maybe I'm misunderstanding it, like taking care of yourself for me really falls under that, right? But taking care of yourself, in my sense, and I know this is going to make me sound like very conservative, right, would mean to make sure like you have, I don't know, like a, and I'm not saying this is not difficult or anything, right, but would be, for example, to make sure you have some kind of exercise routine, you exercise regularly, or you have some kind of productive wind down phase, which might not be, you know, lying in bed for 3 days in a row and binging YouTube or Netflix or whatever, would be, I don't know, like signing up to a meditation class or something, but doing these things which actually, with the actual intention of trying to achieve something, whether that's economical, whether that's trying to achieve something to stabilize yourself in this world, and to enable yourself to be able to take on more responsibility to fix more things around you. Yeah. And again, maybe I'm misunderstanding this, that this is not a central value of, you know, the woke culture or liberalism. Maybe I'm totally wrong about that. But this is sort of like the central aspect for me, because I just don't see, if you do not, you know, adapt the minimum level of responsibility for yourself, then I just don't see, right, if you're taking more from the world than you're giving to it, then that's like, by simple logic, obviously not a sustainable way for our society to structure itself and to, you know, live. So I think that's like my core point. Yeah.
Yes. But no, I totally agree with what I was trying to say, but I didn't really get my point across about what really is taking care of yourself. That is what I consider taking care of yourself, and taking care of yourself for a purpose. So, yeah. So obviously you don't sleep for the sake of sleeping. You sleep for a purpose. You sleep because you want to, well, we know why we want to sleep. Yeah. Doesn't matter. But the thing, I do think that what you're saying is not that associated with conservatism, maybe with Jordan Peterson.
Maybe.
But if I think of my granddad, he is quite conservative on one of the sides of my family, and he's not all for have proper meals, have proper sleep, not like too much, just like in what you should have, like exercise regularly, prioritize that as well. He's all for like work and responsibility, take care of your family, which is like kind of true, but like I do feel like that middle ground you're talking about isn't really, like, I'm sure conservative people have that associated, but I feel like that's what society has kind of introduced now. And it's been like polarized too much. Now it's like only that. Like, you can't just exercise all day and sleep and rest and meditate and eat good food if like you don't work. That's all for that. I know what you're trying to say, that you're doing that with a purpose, and that the purpose has kind of fallen off, and now it's just doing it for the sake of doing it. But I do think that conservatism has the purpose, but doesn't have all the structure around it that you're talking about. Do you kind of get what I mean?
I think so. I mean, I think we also have to take into account, I mean, from what you just said about your grandfather, that of course there's also like a difference in like knowledge, like historically, right? Like my grandparents are also not like prepping their super veggie, like broccoli and lentil meals to perform their like, I don't know, like their health or anything, or like improve like their perform or whatever. But they just all like played their part that they were given by, you know, the gift of life essentially. And they tried to make the best of it. And, you know, they put in the effort. And I mean, like taking care of your family, taking care of your friendships, right? I feel like nowadays, for example, like friendships is also this type of thing, right? Everybody expects the other person to, you know, be there for you at all times and support you through like thick and thin and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like there's a lack of the understanding that you also need to take responsibility for that other person, that it actually requires effort to, you know, keep a relationship alive and keep it healthy and actually show appreciation. So again, like maybe I'm drifting off of these two sides and just moving to, you know, my central thesis that I think is just important to like take care of your things. And I think connecting that central thesis back to these two topics, or like these two different sides, is that yes, I'm all for like not making things harder than they are, right? by taking care of ourselves properly, by, you know, making sure that everybody in society has the ability to actually, you know, also take care and take responsibility by fixing some of the social inclusivity problems and all that kind of things. And also, you know, but at the same time, you know, there's a world out there that's, you know, to be you know, managed and controlled. And if we don't do that, then things just fall apart, both for us individually, but also for us on a societal level.
Yeah, and that's the reality. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So, because I can't really say anything much because I totally agree with, like, your thesis. Like, that's mine as well. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, okay, I do agree that that could be more towards conservatism. I do agree with that, but I don't think that's pure conservatism. That's, like, my end point. But I totally agree with what you're saying, and I totally agree that we have to take the opportunity that how we live, that we don't have the need that our grandparents had, especially your granddad, well, like Germany, you know what I mean. we have to take that into advantage to actually, like, achieve that, what they achieved with what our the world we live in offers us, which is the chance to rest and to go exercise, and because there's no, like, pressing need, and because we have some, we have help from, yeah, from our environment, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, the goal is kind of their goal. It's just in another way. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal, like, centrally, and I mean, I'm not trying to pretend that I have, like, a plan for society or, like, humanity like Brian Johnson does. But I mean, basically, shouldn't the goal be that we live in a world which is stable, which is sustainable, and this again makes me sound more like a liberalist, I guess, or like a, I don't know, yeah. But shouldn't we want to live in a world that's stable and sustainable, and is so for the majority, if not all of the people, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't that be the goal? And if that's the central goal, which is just, like, a good life, and of course, like, this is much easier to say than to do, obviously, right? I don't think I have to say this, but I'm saying it anyway. But I think this central goal, and this is exactly the point, right? We might be able to all agree on this, like, central and very simple, but, like, obvious, useful goal for humanity. But then, of course, like, the debate begins once you start talking about, well, how do you actually get there? And I think that's also, in terms of the lifestyle, and again, we sort of, like, focus on the values and the lifestyle associated with different, you know, ideologies and political sides. Well, I believe if we want to get to a place like that, is like a sort of like a paradise for humanity, we each have to, you know, play our part. And if
it's
we
hard
don't,
work, it's not and, easy. That's
yeah,
the whole
it's
point.
Not easy, right? Like, taking care of yourself is difficult, right? Like, exercising, eating well, making sure you take some time off of work is difficult if you do it intentionally, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a ton of work that's out there, like a ton of work to be done. And I'm not saying that it's not challenging. It's incredibly challenging. But I think we just have to do it anyway because, you know, I don't see anything else to do, right? For yourself, but also, like, for society. I'm not saying that everybody needs to wake up, and I don't either, right? I don't think everybody needs to wake up with a sense of, okay, let's fix humanity, like, in the morning.
No,
like, with your morning
coffee. Yeah, but by kind of fixing kind of yourself and having a purpose, and, like, that will, like, that has to automatically improve society. Like, it has to.
Yeah, because first of all, it's a starting point, right? And it's just like you go from the inside out, start with yourself, try to get things. And this again sounds very conservatist, I guess. You start with yourself, try to fix yourself in the sense that you try to improve the aspects of yourself that are not as desirable, both for yourself, but also for the people and the community around you. And then you work from there. And if you can, I mean, this is almost like me quoting Jordan Peterson, which I know would probably annoy a lot of people, right? But then like once you've sort of managed to stabilize yourself, then you can see, okay, can you take on like a bit more? Can you maybe do something for someone else? And that could just be like nurturing a friendship, right? Can you be a really good friend to one person? That's difficult, right? And it takes work, but I don't know. I just see that as like the only thing that's going to get us individually and like as a community somewhere good.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to focus on your individuality for social betterness, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, betterness is a nice word.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, not focus on yourself for the sake of like, it's you what's important. Like, that's, not what we're saying. So, yeah.
I don't know. This is a difficult topic to talk about, right? I think we both sort of struggled with it today.
Yeah, definitely.
But I don't know. I think, and again, like, just a final disclaimer, like, we definitely, like, deviated from, you know, just talking about these two sides. And of course, this is, like, also like very much based on like our own perceptions and understandings
of these topics that we have,
and also like on our like stories or experiences, and probably also, you know, based on our environments and the societies in which we grew up, right? So not trying to say, just as a final disclaimer, that we have all the answers or anything.
We don't. We're just trying to figure out life as we go. I'm like thinking of our casual dev.
Our slogan.
Yeah, no, but it is completely true. We're just sharing what we think. And if people agree, then great. I agree with it. So
that sounds very individualistic. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but everyone has their own opinions, and like you can. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think this was best. And I don't know.
Yeah, and I think,
like, scientifically, anyway, it still like helps people. So it does, though. Like,
sorry. I mean, I guess that's like ground for like arguments again, right? And I think it's important to say, well, first of all, I think it's important that it's okay to have these conversations, which to me is so ridiculous to even have to say that, right? But I think we should be able to talk about these things and talk about them openly and just share like our honest current opinions, which might change in the future, right? But share our current opinions and explore them and not have, you know, these topics be this thing where, I don't know, I feel like, okay, this is like a last final bit of what's the word? Oh, I'm looking for this word. Anyway, like a last final bit of, you know, negative emotions on this So, and this comes just back to, I mean, this is basically just the definition of political polarization, but I really hate this where, especially, I don't know, I see it, you know, with the generation of my parents, right? These people who've, you know, built their lives, but they're not super old or anything, right? And when they have conversations about these topics, it's, and again, I'm generalizing, of course, right? But it just seems like much of it is so superficial, right? You don't actually explore these topics in depth because everybody is just afraid to actually go there, or just does not like, or just does not want to risk of being challenged in their political view or their worldview or their value perception. And so I think it's important, again, that we have the ability to have these conversations and just share our current open, authentic, honest opinions. But then, of course, to stress, I think it's also important that if you get the chance, you actually talk to people who disagree with you. I mean, we have this problem very often that we always agree with each other. And I think, you know, it's great in some ways, and it's like satisfying, of course, right? If you say something and you have another person that you say that thing to agree with you, then it's, of course, it's satisfying.
Yeah.
But that's a problem in a sense in itself, because that's also like part of this political polarization. We just talk to the people that we agree with, and so we end up in these bubbles of these same opinions, and then that reinforces our opinions, and then we drift so far off that once we actually talk to someone from the other side, you know, which again is also in itself like this concept of two sides is also like part of this, right? But then we talk to someone from the other side, and now we're so far off that we have so little understanding of the other side and so little temper to try to understand that side that we just end up rejecting it.
Yeah, I'd love to, like, obviously no one is going to comment because not many people are, well, I'm going to manifest it. People are going to listen to this eventually. Well, it doesn't matter. I'd love for, like, to have comments of people, like, totally disagreeing and, like, bashing us and, like, being like, what the hell are you saying? But with, obviously, with arguments, I would want them to tell me why they disagree. And it would be so interesting because maybe, like, they'd change my mind or they'd open my mind to something completely new. But that is the problem, that we agree with each other. So, and because we don't have that audience that would disagree. But I'd love that. I know people are like, you want good comments, but I'd love to be challenged because we have these conversations to kind of, like, learn and, like, learn what we think. And
yes.
Because sometimes I don't even think about this, so I don't know what I think. So if I don't know, I'd love for someone to contradict us. We should, like, invite someone who we know wouldn't agree.
Yeah, there's actually this German YouTube channel, and they host these events. But there's one topic, and they usually invite like roughly 8 people, right? And 4 people of each opinion side regarding that topic, if you can say so. So basically it could be, well, the topic of abortion, for example, and they might 4 people which are pro and 4 people which are con abortion. And then it's just this, and they have this, like, it's like a TV show. So it's so they have on the ground, there's these different, you know, boxes, and they each stand in their own line, and then they can decide, you know, each person says something that they can decide if they want to go one step forward in the sense of, you know, agreeing with that person or accepting that argument for that side, or whether they go a step back, sort of rejecting that argument, right? But even that, which the whole idea is to confront these sides and to finally have this exchange of two different sides, even then, what I really dislike, and again, this is something you could again challenge, but I really dislike the lack of ability, well, the lack of willingness to take a topic and look at it as a whole, but then also, like, differentiate different parts of it, right? And to really, like, not just say, okay, this topic, I'm so pro, I'm so con, but, like, going into the details and, like, differentiating and then just, like, openly discussing something. I mean, it seems so basic that if you want to have a discussion, you should go into that discussion with some level of openness. Otherwise, why the heck are you having the conversation? Right? And it's not to say that you should give up your opinion or anything, but you should be willing to try to get something from the other person, right?
Conversations were like no opinions linked to anything, just talking about a topic. And then if you form an opinion about an aspect of the topic, not linked to anything, you're just talking about apples, they're green, and then you suddenly realize, I don't like that they have to be washed. Whatever. You don't link that to anything. You're just having a conversation about something, and you're forming opinions about something with no worry that you're associating it to anything. It's just having a conversation. And opinions are opinions. They're not, I don't know, it's just when they're linked to anything, it's so annoying because then that opinion turns into something else that's not what you're saying. That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about a certain thing, a certain aspect of it. Yeah.
I think that's a really good point, right? Like sometimes when we have conversations about topics, could be something political, could be something else, like could be about like the way you like prefer like your eggs to be prepared, whether it's like cooked or scrambled or whatever. Could be something else, but we don't like isolate it to have that safe conversation where everyone can discuss it and dissect it and also change their opinions. But we have it so connected to often our personality and our identity that the attack or the challenging of our belief or our opinion on how to prepare an egg, right, feels like an attack on our identity and our personality.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, that's like, you don't want that. It's like, it feels existential then. And then you get into this like fight or flight mode, like the survival mode, and you just,
yeah,
like you narrow down and then just, okay, I'm going to counter this challenging, like this incoming error. I'm going to put up a shield. I'm going to fight back. You know, I'm going to,
yeah,
stab him from the back with my second knife in my pocket or whatever. And yeah, I think that is a problem. Of course, again, that's easier for us to say as young individuals who haven't yet, you know, formed our solid opinion on everything, right? As you grow older and you've sort of identified with something for a longer period of time, of course it becomes more challenging to be open and to derive from that or deviate from that. So yeah, it's a whole mess, right? I mean, us talking about this, you know, it's difficult to talk about it. It's difficult because connected to so many other problems. I mean, our inability often to even have discussions is like such a fundamental problem to all of these other problems, right? So it's all difficult, but I don't think that's a reason to like just stop talking, which I think is like often the go-to thing, right? You have a difficult conversation about a topic with people who are disagreeing with each other, and it just becomes so difficult and messy that everyone just decides to, you know, call it quits and just not talk to the other person again.
Yeah. Which is total like nonsense. Like, why? But yeah, it just happened. Like, and it's happened to me, and it's happened to you probably. And it's,
yeah,
just,
of course. But, yeah.
It's, yeah, it's just pointing out the problem. It's true, and I don't like it. And yeah. But I do think we did do kind of a good job with this conversation.
Don't say not, that. Don't say.
Not in a conclusion sense, yeah, of way, but in having a discussion about a topic like this, I don't, for me at least, I don't think I attributed myself to any of the sides. I just had a conversation about it, and there's things I agree, things I don't agree, things I don't know. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think we defended anything, which is sometimes the problem of conversations. I think we just had a conversation about a topic. Yeah. And we had opinions, of course. People might like them, might not, might attribute it to something or not. But we weren't defending. Yeah, that's the thing. We weren't defending our views or our opinions. We were just stating our opinions and kind of thinking about them. That's, yeah, what I mean of having a conversation.
Yeah, and at least we sort of try to also differentiate or specify when we actually formulated an opinion, what specifically, yeah, we were referring to, right? So
yeah.
I would agree. I also, like I said that at the beginning, I wouldn't say that I'm like a conservatist. I wouldn't say I'm a liberalist, because even just, you know, taking these two terms, right? I don't know, what are we talking about? Are we talking about these two topics in a political sense? Are we, like, which specific part of that? Are we talking about that on a social level? So I think it's important to specify. And again, I think this lack of detail or depth in discussion sometimes just leads to problems and also misunderstandings.
Yeah.
Okay. Ah. Okay, we had our conversation.
I feel like you're down.
No, I'm not down. It's just, it's also like not anything, right? It's just, I think I wish we had more of these conversations. And I also wish I had more of these conversations and also with like more people. Because again, like nowadays we're just like often, and again, we're just pushed to do something. Also sounds like there's so much nuance in these problems, because there's such, or just not even problems, just like these topics, there's just so much nuance, because like in the way you phrase an argument, in the way you start a discussion, like with the intentionality, in the, you know, levels or the number of areas and topics associated with one topic, it's just a very big branch. And yeah, it's just like a maze and it's difficult to navigate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's also what I'm realizing. That, I mean, obviously that's something you have in mind, but I'm kind of seeing it now, is that there's so many problems or discussions or things that we realize that really that's a problem you identify, you discuss, but you can't really do anything about it. So the discussion part is like, I think last podcast, we talked about having deep conversations with people and we identify the problem, but like we got no real solution. And today is the exact same thing. And I think like that's just life. We can't like figure it out, or we can figure it out, but we can't solve it. And it's fine. Like, I don't know. I'm just happy seeing the problem and I'm saying, oh yeah, this happens. That's true. I'm gonna like discuss it, try and discuss it with other people. And I don't know. I feel like this awareness, not many people have, because not many people think about it. And that's just like a great thing for me. This was a productive session for that, and the same with the last one. And it is annoying that, yes, I wish I had more conversations like this without like linking to identities and stuff like that. But well, it is what it is, and at least we know we've identified it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But I think we, well, I think it was still, I mean, we've dragged out this end part now. I think we're both failing to find an end point to this. Okay, final words. I think this was a good conversation, not in the sense that we found some conclusion, but that we had an like authentic and open discussion about the central topic. And I think we shed light on some of its aspects, not all of them, of course not, and maybe not in, you know, the best formulation or anything. We tried our best, which is our way of taking our responsibility of, even just for ourselves, of discussing these topics, so we can actually, you know, use that information or that knowledge that we gain from these discussions to decide how we want to operate ourselves in this world, right? On a practical level.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, even after we finish this podcast, right, there's a world we have to live in and operate in and make decisions in. But I think these conversations, even though they might not lead to a specific conclusion for us, which for some people might be frustrating, right? Of course, it would be satisfying to just have like a conclusion double dot at the end and say, okay, this is the way, right? We don't have that, but it's still part of the process to have these conversations, to, you know, relate that back to practical decisions in your life, right? And to do your best job at reflecting on decisions in your life to the best of your abilities. Okay.
What would your final practical conclusion? Sorry. What would your practical conclusion be? What would you, what would you do from now on based on this?
Well, I think what I've gained from this conversation is that, first of all, again, and this is what I've gained, right? Specifically, like,
yes,
focus on
exactly.
On
this is what I'm asking. Yes.
Yeah. Is that we have to be very careful in terms of, if we talk about topics like that, if I enter a conversation, right, like somewhere, could be on campus, could be at a party or something, about these two, yeah, this topic of conservatism versus liberalism, or these two different sides, right, that I really want to be careful in how I formulate an opinion, because I want to actually make sure that I specify what I'm referring to, right? And that it might be the case that, you know, or it's probably the case that I don't associate myself fully with either of them. And so I have to be careful in how I formulate myself, right? And not in the sense, you know, careful as in fearful in how I formulate these opinions, but just smart, or like sort of clever, or like, yeah, just authentic in how I formulate my opinions. And what I also gain is that there's probably some good middle ground, right? I think also, you know, me settling in on this final core value that, you know, it comes down to responsibility. I think this conversation also helped me understand that responsibility is not necessarily in contradiction with some of the liberalist or like the woke culture values anything, but it's a slightly different take on it, where it's about you do your best, which again is about work and putting an effort into solving problems, but also not just, you know, solving economical problems, which I think you pointed out very nicely is more so connected to conservatism, but you can also connect responsibility to some of the social issues which are, you know, trying to be taken care of by liberalists, right? And so I think I was able to draw a better connection from my core value of responsibility to both of these sides, right? Yeah, so that's what I'm taking away. Thanks for dragging out this final bit even more with that
question. I think it's important, and I wanted to, I don't know, because right now I want to like finish the call and kind of write down what I've gained from this, because if not, I know I'll forget, kind of. And I never do this after sessions, but I do want to kind of start doing it now, because I do get a lot of value from these, and I get my own conclusions from even myself. From you, I get a lot of things, but I do get things from myself, and I kind of want to write it down. So I just wanted you to clear out for yourself also what you've gained, even if for you it's already clear.
I mean, then let me just, you know, swing back the question to your side.
I need to go to the toilet.
That's a bad excuse. Give me a two-liner. Just say okay, you're conservatist or liberalist. Yeah. Just say it.
Just say it. No.
Pick a side.
So okay, for me, kind of similar to the first thing you said about in conversations, trying to be clear about what I'm trying to say and authentic about what I'm trying to say. It's also so it's not misunderstood with something else that I'm not saying that people link it to. And I also, again, that I kind of want to share with other people that that when we are having those type of conversations, I want to say like, okay, this conversation is very interesting, but can we have this conversation forgetting our choices of if we're conservative or liberalist or whatever, and can we just have a conversation on the topic? And that's something I want to start doing and saying to my friends, okay, let's forget about it all, let's just talk about it and have opinions and not linking to anything, just staying between us and just, I don't know, like we had. And I want to try to expand that to my circle and my conversations.
Yeah, I think that's a very good learning. All right, so you can finally, you know, do your thing. Let's end this call here. It was great talking to you as always, and I'll see you next Sunday.
See you next Sunday. Bye.